Chapter 19. Panic is like a fire. It starts with a spark, and if it's not snuffed out, it spreads quickly. Fear is driven by winds of gossip wherever nervous minds and an uncertain future provide fuel. Terror is as swift and damaging as any blaze. And all of these things, as real and present as they are, exist only within the confines of people's minds, just like markets, and value, and security. The panic started in Andorran's financial sector, lit up by the fall of Highwatch. Thousands of bankers, brokers, and financial clerks simultaneously realized that their balance sheets were anything but balanced. Stocks plunged, bonds flew up, and then dropped precipitously as investors took a closer look at the kingdom's coffers. The entirety of the Freedland's banking system seemed to be going mad. The market had its tumble when Andorran was deep in mourning for its heroes and its king, and for a time the city's dampened spirits were inoculated against the turmoil on the wall. But the economic fallout was bad enough to call the financial world out of the back corners of the public consciousness and onto the lips of every newsboy and town crier within a week of Handor's fall. One by one, every citizen of the Freedlands felt that precipitous drop in the stomach that heralds a new status quo worse than anything anyone could have imagined. Commerce ground to a halt, credit dried up, and without funds to pay employees, companies began to shed jobs. Temples and government offices were overrun by the people who had been just barely clinging to financial solvency before the crash. The sudden drop in the markets had given them a firm shove over the edge and into poverty. People were frightened. Many were panicked. Many more were starting to become angry. And while some blamed the bankers, and others the government, and others still the Heroes Guild, there was one point that virtually everyone could agree on. The future looked a lot darker.
"It only gets worse from here,"
said Gorm Ingerson, hoisting a tankard of grog into the air. His dire proclamation was incongruent with the wobbly grin he wore on his face, but he had long passed the point of drunkenness where his circumstances and his emotions had completely separated from one another. Grunts and slurred sentiments of agreement rose up from the figures hunkered around the bar at the Black Swan, Aberyth's premier tavern for professional heroes. The bar sat just inside the city's northern gates, the last night in civilization for many a party headed for adventure in the Pine Fells.
"Here is what happens. First,"
Gorm slurred to the blurry woman next to him,
"first step is to drink all your money away. Then you have to get some money, so you take it from some poncy heroes. But they won't let you drink where you've been looting, so you gotta move on. Drink, fight, loot, move. Fight, loot, drink, move, drink, fight. Drink, drink, and then you start again."
"What point?"
rumbled a voice above his companion. Through his inebriated haze, it occurred to Gorm that the woman next to him was not in fact a woman, but instead a tattoo of a comely young ogress inked on the side of a massive arm. He looked slowly up the appendage to see an ogre staring vacantly across the bar. He seemed familiar. The dwarf shook his head.
"Ah, there ain't a point beyond the drinking," he said. "What else is there?"
He took another pull of his grog, and the ogre drank from a keg with the top torn off. Something still tugged at the back of Gorm's mind, a niggling sense of loss that refused to let go and be washed away on a tide of alcohol.
"Thing is," he started, and then lost the thought in a belch. "Thing is, I thought there might be something... you know, a reason to do things."
The ogre drank from his keg. Gorm drank from his tankard. For a time he sat and let his brain pickle pleasantly, but unpleasant ideas and memories kept bubbling up in the sloshing haze at the edge of his eyes. He saw heroes from his old career, from the days when he'd been Pyrebeard. He still missed Ataya Trueheart, and he still felt a sting deep within when the image of Gariel swam past his mind's eye. And Eheen the Red, of course. Eheen's countenance and Gaist's were one and the same. That reminded Gorm of Caitha, who reminded him of Thane, and that brought the mages to mind. He even missed the bard, a little. And beneath those new wounds, old ones still festered. He saw Tibrin and Niln in the foam atop his mug, staring up from the suds with apparent disappointment.
It was the priest. Priest and the goblin, Gorm said. They had me fighting and believing, thinking I could do some good, like a fool.
Good,
said the ogre.
Aye, be a hero. Save the world. Fight for truth and justice, said Gorm. That's what they wanted. But you can't.
Gorm fell into silence. Fighting for loot and gold had its downsides, he'd learned, but at the end of the day you could hold loot and gold in your purse and maybe swap them for a cold ale. High concepts like truth and justice couldn't fatten your coin purse or fill your tankard. Or save a friend. He took a swig from his drink. The ogre, oddly enough, abstained.
Fight for justice.
The huge patron sounded reflective, or at least shiny.
I tried, Gorm said. I tried to be a hero. Save the thing. The world. Be better.
He shook his head.
It doesn't work. Or maybe it's just me. Either way, I always wind up back here.
Be better.
The ogre slowly, deliberately set his keg down behind the bar.
I just said I can't,
snapped Gorm, looking irritably up at the ogre. There was something familiar about that empty stare.
Justice,
the ogre interrupted, independent of any external stimulus. Gorm's face screwed up.
Are we having the same...
Justice, Brunt style,
Mr. Brunt finished, standing.
Mr. Brunt, that's how I knew you.
Gorm slapped his knee and knocked over his tankard in the process.
You're that Weasel Flynn's old lackey. I thought I did you in back in Bloodroot. How you been?
Mr. Brunt, however, was clearly participating in a different conversation. He raised a massive fist in the air.
Be hero,
he said.
Be good.
Some of the other patrons scooted their bar stools farther away.
You didn't listen, barked Gorm. There's no point, remember?
But Mr. Brunt was in so many ways a blunt instrument, and he didn't need a point to be destructive. With a final roar of
Justice!
Bellowed to the entire room, and yet nobody in particular, the ogre rushed out through the front door, sending cracking shutters through the tavern's old timbers.
Could have at least said he remembered me,
Gorm grumbled.
Could have at least opened the door, said the barkeep, staring at the trampled wood and mangled hinges.
Doesn't matter.
Gorm stood in his stool and refilled his grog from Mr. Brunt's abandoned keg while the barkeep was preoccupied.
Nothing matters,
he added, surreptitiously spiking his drink with a flask of dwarven rum from his belt pouch. He took another long drink and let the burning liquor pull him closer to the edge of nothingness.
Sweet oblivion, Queen Margie gasped, dabbing tears from her eyes. The end of my lonely suffering, a time when I can join my true love in death.
One of the newest ladies-in-waiting moved as if to step forward, perhaps to comfort the queen, but the royal baker stopped her with a wave of her hand and a shake of her head. Preya Havenbrook had been the royal baker since she was 20, still a girl by halfling standards, and now she was well into middle age. She'd been baking treats for Queen Marja for more years than many of the ladies-in-waiting had been walking, and none could read the queen's moods and thoughts better than she. You didn't need Preya's decades in service to the crown, however, to see that the queen's latest emotional outburst had nothing to do with grief for her late husband. Firstly, because Handor and Marja had never held more than a mild disdain for one another, and secondly, because the queen was clearly caught up in one of her books again. The queen gripped a copy of Trotbury Tales by Tael Adamantine. Preya was familiar with the author. All of Adamantine's books featured swarthy men, swooning damsels, notoriously predictable plot lines, and a few scenes that made the royal baker blush to think about. Given that Marja was near the end of the book, she had likely reached the point wherein some young and gorgeous person was at the point of lovelorn suicide, either the victim of a tragic misunderstanding or about to create one.
So beautiful, gasped Marja, dabbing at her eyes. I'll take my tea now. The queen's appearance reminded the baker of a great Dalen house cat, with tiny features in the middle of too much face and bright eyes that were at once vibrant and clueless. She was perched with the grace of a fat tabby on an intricately carved chair that strained and warped under the weight of her royal bulk. Linen-lined tables were set in front and on either side of her, covered with platters of tiny, brightly frosted tea cakes.
"Majesty, the court is waiting," said the most senior of the ladies-in-waiting.
As the eldest in that position, it was her duty to remind the queen of her duties, an unfortunate fact that meant everyone knew she would sooner or later fall into disfavor and be sent to work in the kitchens. Then the next girl would step up to take the burden on for a season. It was said that what the ladies-in-waiting were waiting for was a different job. Judging by the flash in Queen Marge's eyes, the current girl wasn't long for the position.
"I know, Clarissa, but I'm busy." "Yes, Majesty," said the lady-in-waiting,
who was not named Clarissa, but who knew better than to correct the queen.
"I don't see why I should go, anyway."
The queen's painted face set into a petulant pout.
"It's going to be a gaggle of stiff-necked geese in suits, gabbling and squawking for hours about petty matters." "The city is in peril, Majesty," said not Clarissa. "The undead are on our doorstep, and the markets continue their freefall. Courtiers whisper about riots brewing, or even rebellion—"
"Yes, yes, all of that. That's what I was talking about."
Marja waved away the lady-in-waiting's concern and pointed a meaty finger at a tray of round cakes with sunburst yellow frosting.
"What are these?" "Lemon with raspberry mint filling," said Preya.
The queen daintily lifted a cake from the platter and popped it into her mouth. After a prolonged session of thoughtful mastication, she began plucking the cakes off the tray with both hands and shoveling them into her mouth in a sort of delicate frenzy. In a few seconds, the entire platter was gone. Marja dabbed at her face with a linen napkin, then clapped her hands together.
"Wonderful!"
The royal baker brushed some errant crumbs from her face and apron.
"Thank you, Majesty."
"And what are these?" asked the queen, pointing at another tray.
"Those are chocolate crumble with news,"
shouted a lady-in-waiting, bursting through the door of Marge's private quarters.
"What is it?"
asked the queen, scowling as she popped a chocolate crumble tea cake with strawberry jam into her mouth.
"A thousand pardons, Majesty," panted the lady-in-waiting. "It's just that you told us to come immediately if Johann—"
"Droha!"
chirped the queen through a mouthful of cake. She clapped her hands quickly.
"Is she here?"
The young maid nodded.
"He says he needs an audience with—" "He's here! Oh, he's here! Hurry, 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 help me! Ooh, I need to get ready!"
Marja bounced up with such sudden force that she nearly upended her table. The ladies-in-waiting rushed to assist the queen, adding powder, neatening the lipstick, wiping frosting and stray tea-cake crumbs from the royal gown. After a few moments of hurried preparations, Marja had arranged herself to her satisfaction on another couch, a velvet pillow beneath her voluminous arm, and holding her book in one hand.
"Come in,"
she sang.
"Ha-ha!"
laughed a voice like a trumpet, and an armored foot kicked the door open. Johann the Mighty strode into the room, a vision in shining armor, his red cape and golden hair streaming behind him. The royal baker felt her heart flutter at the sight of him.
"Oh, Johann,"
said the queen, with what could only be described as desperate casualness,
"I was just doing some light reading, as I often do."
"Majesty, I am sorry to visit you in your time of grief."
Johann flashed a conciliatory smile, his teeth sparkling.
"What?"
"I know it is hard still, for it has not yet been 3 weeks since good Handor's fall,"
Johann gently prompted.
"Right," said the queen, "him."
"But the kingdom needs you," said the champion. "In dire times such as this, our land needs a strong leader to guide us against encroaching threats."
"I know."
Marja seemed to deflate a little as she looked away.
"Perhaps," Johann strode further into the room, prompting the royal baker to press herself back against the wall, "perhaps grief has sapped your strength."
Marja shrugged and nodded half-heartedly.
"Perhaps you need a shoulder to lean on, to support you," suggested the paladin.
Marja nodded again and dabbed her eyes with a handkerchief.
"Perhaps something beautiful can come from tragedy," said Johann.
Marge's eyes lit up and her jaw went slack as she turned back to the champion standing at her feet.
"Something that we've held back for an eternity,"
Johann was leaning over the couch now, his voice low and breathy as he stared into Marge's eyes. The queen's lip quivered as if to speak, but all she could manage in her excitement was to rapidly clap her hands. "Oh, my queen," rasped Johann. He wrapped a gauntleted hand around her, and with a grunt of exertion lifted her to his lips. Marge threw her arms around him. It took a few moments for the queen to remember herself enough to dismiss the servants with a wave of her hand, though by then it was an entirely unnecessary gesture. The royal baker and the ladies-in-waiting were already making for the door, as fast as decorum would allow.
"Have they no shame?"
Ashurzu muttered to Jorik. "Nobody should have to see this."
"Patience, Ashurzu," said the ancient wise one. "They are trying."
"They should have known better," she retorted, watching the pair of orcs setting up a crude easel and charts. "This should have been complete when we entered the room. The key to a successful presentation is preparation."
"And an audience with an open mind,"
said Jorik. Ashurzu was about to reply when the portly orc giving the presentation cleared his throat. His topknot was peppered with gray, as was the finger-length chin-strap beard he wore.
"Thank you for coming, great lady. I'm sure our presentation will bring you great joy."
"It had better to warrant calling on me at this hour," said Ashurzu, bundling her furs around her.
The meeting was in a tiny hut on the outskirts of the Red Horde's encampment, far from any bonfires or braziers, and the damp chill of a late spring night still hung in the air. Jorik's elbow gently pressed into her side. He managed to give her a stern look and a sidelong smile in the same expression. Ashurzu sighed and slumped back in her seat.
"But I will hear you, Agor Dasnabug," she said. "You may proceed."
"Thank you, honored one," said the orc. "Now, imagine this. You are going about your life, trying to feed your whelps, keep your hut clean, and perform feats of might and excellence for the glory of your people. Valra, the visual aid!"
The only other occupant of the hut, a young orcus in a simple red shawl, placed a frame with stretched lambskin on the easel. A happy-looking orcus was painted in thick, fast strokes on the canvas.
"When all of a sudden you are told your great tribe is no more,"
Agor continued, gesturing at the painting,
"and you must fight for a new tribe, one that does not honor your ways or see your great deeds, one that will lead your people to ruin. Valra!"
Valra replaced the lambskin canvas with another painting, this one depicting an unhappy-looking orcus dressed in crimson robes.
"Oh no,"
she intoned, as stiff and well-rehearsed as a military drill.
"It is so enraging, is it not? Has this ever happened to you? Ah!"
Agor's question ended in a small cry as he finally turned back to his audience.
"Get to your point,"
Ashurzu pushed each word through gritted fangs.
"Aha, yes, it will be so. 1,000 pardons, great lady."
The orc dabbed sweat from his brow with a small handkerchief.
"Valra, put up the fourth image. No, the one with the chart. The other chart! Here!"
Ashurzu closed her eyes, rubbed her temples, and tried to ignore the sounds of a small scuffle up by the easel. Eventually, the pair seemed to get their presentation back in some facsimile of order.
"Your pardons again, great lady."
Agor pointed to a new lambskin, this one adorned with several graphs.
"Now, did you know that according to recent surveys, over half of the Shadowkin in the Red Horde wish to return to their original tribes? And 7 in 10 said they do not support the Red Horde's violent ways?"
"Yes,"
said Ashurzu.
"Truly? Good."
Sweat ran down Agor's olive skin in rivulets, unhindered by the constant dabbing of his soaked handkerchief. Nevertheless, he thrust a moist palm toward Ashurzu and put on a smile that made up for its lack of confidence with face-contorting scale.
"So, when will you be talking to Chief Darik about the Red Horde?"
"You presume too much,"
said Ashurzu, fighting to retain her composure. Agor withdrew his hand as if from a fire.
"I am sorry, lady. I was merely attempting to be closing at all times." "That was your closing pitch?"
growled Ashurzu.
"That was how you close a sale?"
"My lady,"
Jorik put a hand on her shoulder, but it was too late to stop her now.
You muddied your pitch with a poor analogy. You failed to define your proposition. You buried your lead, and when you finally got around to it, you added no value to your ask.
The young wise one leapt to her feet and stalked toward the shrinking orc.
You called me forth in the middle of the night with this poorly strategized presentation? I was merely...
Augur stumbled, literally and figuratively, as he backed away from Ashurzu.
I thought, the path of the aggressive seller says that you would tell me of the path of the aggressive seller,
Ashurzu hollered.
I am the daughter of Zerthraka Dazgusvarda. I have sold to goblins and to the largest of lightling corporations. I wrote a pitch that impressed officers of the Vorpal Corporation. I walk the path of aggressive sales as nobody else, and I will not be sold by the fumblings of a novice. Forgive me!
Agor groveled.
We are desperate, Lady Ashurzu. Someone must stop your brother before we are all killed. The people whisper it in secret, but fear for their lives if they should speak. You must talk to the chieftain. He will listen to you, the daughter of his sire. If the chieftain cared for me and my thoughts, would he have moved my hut so far from his own?
Ashurzu snorted.
Honored one, if the chieftain did not care for you, you would be dead,
said Agor.
Those who speak against the Red Horde are slain, taken in the night.
The words hit Ashurzu in the gut.
Taken at night? No, my brother would never dishonor himself with such trickery.
Perhaps that is so,
Jorik interjected, measuring his words carefully as he spoke.
But others would. Perhaps there is more to this pitch than the presentation it was wrapped in, honored one.
It seems as much.
Ashurzu took a deep breath.
I am sorry I did not hear you, Agor Daznabug Dagazvarda. So, you will talk with the chieftain?
Hope filled Agor's eyes.
I will think on it,
Ashurzu said.
Your words ring true, as does Jorik's wisdom. But what would the tribe do if I convinced Darik to leave the ways of the Red Horde? We have raided a lightling town, and they do not forgive such offenses. If we are to return to the path of the aggressive seller, I must have a plan to bring before the chieftain, an alternative to the Red Horde's ways. May you have all speed, then, lady. I fear our opportunity to act will not last long,
Agor said, inadvertently straying back too close to the script. On cue, his assistant stepped forward and thrust out a wooden satchel.
Plus, you shall receive this attractive bag when you act now,
said Valra automatically, just before Agor managed to wrestle her back toward the door.
We will wait on your wisdom,
the would-be sales orc called over his shoulder.
Thank you for hearing us.
Ashurzu and Jorik hurried out of the hut and made their way through the maze of tents and shanty huts, past the warg kennels and the pig farms, to the small hovel that Ashurzu and her attendants had been banished to. She bid her mentor good night before entering her room, a solemn space of rough-hewn pine and sparse decoration. Her bedroll brought her no peace, and she tossed and turned for much of the night. Possibilities and consequences drifted before her sleepless eyes, each less desirable than the last. It felt like the gnomish puzzle boxes that the Vorpal Corporation managers had kept on their desks in Bloodroot, except now she was trapped in the center of one. And one piece just didn't fit. Dawn found Ashurzu seated on the dirt floor of her hut, staring at a wrinkled parchment. A grizzled face stared back at her from above a promise of a very large sum.
What have you done, Gorm Ingerson? She muttered. They say you were on our side, but we assumed you were with the guild. Why do they want to arrest you?
Dev Strongarm wasn't sure what Gorm Ingerson had done to merit such a large bounty. He was mostly focused on the bounty itself, which was printed in bold letters across the poster in the young hero's hands. "And you're sure you're Gorm Ingerson?" he said again, doubtful. "The criminal."
"The worst,"
groaned the pile of furs and armor in the hallway outside of Dev's room.
"Everyone, dead or miserable. It's all my fault. I'm turning myself in."
Dev looked at the poster again, trying to compare the inebriated face below him
to the crude woodcut portrait. It was hard to concentrate with all of those zeros looking up at him.
And you want me to turn you in to face justice?
You're with the Heroes Guild, right?
Yes, Dev answered with some reluctance.
Arrest me, sir!
The young warrior thought about it for a moment. In his short career as a professional hero, he'd found that chances for success didn't come his way very often. Now, opportunity was literally banging on his door in the small hours of the morning, and if Dev didn't hurry, opportunity was going to wake up every other hero in the tavern. Most of the higher-ranked heroes would be happy for a shot at so much gold, and equally happy to shove Dev aside for it. All right, come in. He ushered Gorm into his room and stepped across the hall to wake Matina. A few moments later, Dev and the young cleric stood just inside the door to Dev's room, weighing their options.
What if it's not him? Said Matina.
It looks like him, said Dev. And if it is, he held up the poster.
It's me,
said the dwarf, who had settled onto Dev's bed and was nursing a large flask.
Wow, said Matina, still looking at the zeros. All we do is take him down the road to the guild hall, turn him into the Aberyth Guild Hall, hissed the cleric. Are you crazy?
It was an unspoken truth that Aberyth's local branch of the Heroes Guild was completely corrupt. It remained unspoken because the arbiters and masters of the Aberyth branch had spies everywhere, and the only way to get any questing done in the city was to work within their complex blend of patronage, bureaucracy, and graft. Most upstanding heroes preferred to run out of Hertzwood if they had the ranks and reputation to get work there. Dev and Matina didn't.
No, you're right, said Dev. If we bring him there, all of the reward and credit will go to one of the Arbiter's bootlickers.
Matina sniffed. We'd be lucky to see a copper piece.
Tragic that Hertzwood's been sacked, said Dev. We'll have to take him all the way to Andoran.
That's a long way to go, said Matina.
Dev shrugged. So? If the undead are coming here like everyone says, evacuations will begin in a couple of weeks, and we've been between quests for days now.
I'm still not sure it's him.
The cleric glowered at the dwarf.
Well, it's worth the chance, said Dev. I'm taking him to Andoran. Do you want to help me or not?
Of course. You're not cutting me out of the deal, snapped Matina. We just have to figure out how to get him there.
I have a horse, said the dwarf.
Well, that's a start, Matina said. But then he could just ride away when he sobers up, said Dev.
We'll chain him.
The cleric turned to Gorm. We'll chain you, all right?
Course, slurred the dwarf. You'd have to.
Dev nodded.
Now all we need are some... I've got a pair of manacles in my room, said Matina.
Perfect. So we... Hang on. You've got manacles in your room?
The cleric rolled her eyes.
Oh, don't try to make it sound weird.
I'm not making it sound anything, said Dev. It sounds weird. I'm just observing that it sounds weird.
You've got 50 feet of rope in your pack, Matina shot back. Well, yes, but...
I mean, everyone knows you need a 50-foot length of rope for an adventure, sputtered Dev.
What if you fell down a pit? What if you needed to take a prisoner? How often does that happen?
Well, we're not in a pit, are we? Hissed Matina.
Ha! She's got you there, laughed the dwarf.
Dev exhaled through his teeth.
Just go get the manacles.
Within the hour, they had packed their belongings, and at Gorm's earnest insistence, retrieved the dwarf's pack and axe. Their gear secure, Dev and Matina tried to inconspicuously guide the dwarf out through the inn's common room. Unfortunately, there are few things more conspicuous than a drunken dwarf in chains.
You guys are great, Gorm leered at Dev. So great. I'm so happy we're traveling together.
Shut up, breathed Dev.
He was doubled over so the dwarf could sling a heavy arm across his shoulders, but with Gorm's hands manacled together, it felt more like he was in a headlock. He noticed several posters around the room identical to the one Gorm had brought him, and hoped that nobody else did.
Just keep moving, hissed Matina from next to him. She nodded to a pair of burly warriors in enchanted armor, watching from a dark table.
They stumbled out the inn's back door into the stables and sent a stable boy to fetch their mounts. The lad returned with their pair of gray mares, as well as a handsome elven steed for the dwarf. They saddled the horses and loaded their gear quickly, before confronting another problem.
How do we get him onto the horse? Matina asked.
Can he just... You know, Dev looked at the dwarf.
Gorm burped and toppled over sideways.
I don't think he can, said Matina.
I told you not to chain his hands yet, sighed Dev. If we hadn't manacled him, he could have climbed up.
I wouldn't worry about it, said a gruff voice.
A pair of shadows fell over the young heroes. Dev turned to see the pair of burly warriors stepping into the stables, blocking the main exit.
What'd you find there, new blood? Said the larger of the two. Looks like a dwarf lost his way.
Looks like the sort the guild would want to hear about, said the slightly less massive warrior, holding up a copy of Gorm's wanted poster. We'll take it from here.
Dev's mind raced and his heart sank. The warriors had at least 50 pounds and 5 ranks on him, each.
No, said the dwarf, heaving himself to his feet. These are me friends. I'm going with them. They're taking me to Enderin.
Nobody asked you.
The larger of the two warriors loomed over the dwarf and grabbed him by the shoulder, which was his last mistake. Dev wasn't quite sure what happened in the next few seconds, even though he saw it all. He couldn't unsee it, no matter how hard he shut his eyes. Flashes of violence were burned into his retinas, breaking jaws, swords sparking as they carved through their owner's armor, a warrior's face contorting as he was strangled by a pair of manacles. The assault was over just as suddenly as it began. Gorm dropped to the ground amidst the remnants of the warriors, looking at Dev and Matina with black, dead eyes, a snarl or a grin on his face. They stood staring at each other. Dev didn't dare to breathe. Then the dwarf's smile relaxed and looked more genuine, or at least more genuinely inebriated, and a warm haze spread over his irises. He gave a happy burp. Dev's eyes flicked to Matina, who had gone pale as a ghost. She glanced back at him, and he could see that she'd had the same thoughts. It was becoming apparent why the dwarf warranted such a large bounty. What wasn't clear was what Gorm would be capable of when he sobered up, or how he would feel about his new friends.
We're ready? Slurred Gorm.
Almost, said Dev slowly. He nodded deliberately to Matina. I'll help our friend, our good friend, get in the saddle. You go buy as much rum as the horses can carry.